is it about this issue that requires three pieces of legislation to deal with this issue? What's the difference in these?
Well, first of all, there are a series of three that came out just the other day, and the first in the three here, the Improper Payments Elimination and Recovery Improvement Act of 2011, is really the next in an evolution of bills that have attempted to deal with this issue and provide, I think, more and more refinement to agencies and the OMB as they issue guidance to help the CFOs in dealing with this issue. You know, clearly in this area there have been some new developments, IG reports. There was one about deceased beneficiaries recently that obviously drew a lot of attention. You reported just earlier about FEMA's efforts to improve improper payments. And so it's a continuing issue, and I think that things like the Do Not Pay list of contractors that have been convicted of fraud or other types of issues will be the next evolution in the government's attempt to deal with what has been a very longstanding issue.
You mentioned the CFOs. As the focus on improper payments continues, I imagine CFOs are not the only C-level executive at agencies whose job changes because of this focus.
No, this is something that really, I think, spans just about the entire C-suite in government. Obviously, CFOs have certain reporting requirements, but the types of payments span a variety of programs, and they certainly get down to the programmatic and project level every bit as much as they do things that are of a routine financial nature.
Now, we all know that the objectives of legislation are not always embodied in the actual legislation that's able to pass. We don't always get the intended result from legislation. As you look at these bills that the Homeland Security Committee's passed and they're now headed to the floor of the Senate, are they on the right track? Are they what the agencies need? Do they include the tools the agencies need to be able to fight improper payments? And do they provide the resources that the agencies need too?
Well, that latter clause that you mentioned about resources is one that really is significant, not just for this piece of proposed legislation, but also one I think we'll get to in a minute about the Homeland Security personnel. But there is a certain amount of funding, but one of the emphases here is on recovery audits, and recovery audits in some cases can be very helpful in defraying the cost of actually going after the source of the improper payment and trying to recover some of the money. I mean, you have to say that this is funding that is well spent and would have a return on it if it actually does lead to improvements in the accuracy. Things like the deceased beneficiaries are aggravated in times when you have some of the economic pressures that people face. There's, you know, an element of bad behavior that starts to crop up to a greater extent. And so having extra effort on these things, more routine checking against established lists and other things like that, I think really is going to make sense. You're right that this bill is just only reported out of committee, and it would need to go through all the final steps to become legislation, and then OMB would have to issue guidance. But it does have bipartisan support, and it's a natural follow-on to the prior legislation. So I think it's very likely the improper payments one to emerges as new legislation.
You mentioned the Interagency Personnel Rotation Act of 2011, and Arjoli Lee writes that would make rotations a requirement in order to enter the senior executive service. She also writes this bill would permit the temporary rotations of some national and homeland security employees to other agencies. What's the financial piece there, though? It's not obvious on the surface.
Well, this one's a little more difficult to put into place in practice. It obviously sounds very attractive and makes lots of sense. And it actually is something that several years ago, when Executive Order 13434, and that was in May of 2007, when that was issued, that actually was focused very specifically on developing a national security personnel force that, among other things, was interoperable and would include some level of rotational assignment to develop that capability. So it's not something new. I think that making it an actual requirement to enter the SES is one that, to some degree, I think is patterned after what goes on within the DOD itself. And this would seem to extend it if it were actually implemented It could look very much like what they do within the DOD, but extended across other SES personnel in the Homeland Security areas.
What is your sense of where that one's headed?
I think that this one is an important one. I think it will need some refinement. I think there will be a fair amount of weighing in, possibly some hearings. There were committees to actually implement the executive order back in May of 07, and there were hearings, I think, in 09. This one does take some funding. There is some disruption, obviously, if you have people who are in key roles moving around from agency to agency for some period of time, so that the human capital and the OPM and the as well as some of the other communities, I'm sure, will weigh in on this as they did a couple of years ago. And I think everyone supports the idea that this is important, but putting it into practice is a little bit more of a challenge, but I think it can be done.
We're almost out of time. The last one is the Whistleblower Protection Enhancement Act of 2011, and it seems like there are various whistleblower bills that come up all the time. What's in this one that we haven't seen before that's new?
Well, I think that, I'm going to say that I have a little bit less familiarity with this one than the other two, but there are some issues, I believe, around the security clearance in this that, that would protect the whistleblower, retaining a security clearance and strengthening that. This is an area that, as you say, continues to be of great concern, and we've seen where whistleblowers and protecting whistleblowers has really accrued some great benefit to the proper functioning of the government. So I'm sure that's the spirit that they're trying to reinforce in protecting that.
Lynn, it's always great to have you on to get your expertise on these things. Thanks very much for being here.
You're welcome. Thank you, Francis.
Linda Springer is the former controller at the Office of Management and Budget, the former director of the Office of Personnel Management, and now with Ernst & Young, and my guest on In Depth with Francis Rose.